You're listening to the best hacker radio show on the internet.
Cheesehead Radio.
I want to be a lifetime
Cheesehead
Green Bay Packer.
Your luck and good.
It was really close. I mean, most of those communication went on there.
Beat Arizona and then come back. And
you know, we had the first down. This and that, and you know, once we burned the timeout, you know, I stuck with the call.
Beat Atlanta.
November and so forth. And moving forward.
And go to Chicago, a place we've won a number of times. Beat them.
We focus clearly on, you know, the next 5 years. I mean, it's exactly the facts. You know.
Go to New York around Christmas. Beat them.
Again, Cheesehead Nation, we are back for another edition of Cheesehead Radio. Your hosts tonight are the perplexed C. D'Angeli of Packers Talk, along with the animated Kelly Hodson, fighter of post office employees, and that Packer girl on Twitter. And then there's little old me, the acquiescing Jersey Al of Packers Talk and Cheesehead TV. Sponsoring the Packers Talk Network, once again, are our good friends at Ticking King, who've been selling Packers, Badgers, Brewers, concerts, and other tickets in Wisconsin for over 25 years. They've got a great reputation for customer service and prices. Really nice people. Be sure to check out their website, theticketking.com. And that pretty much takes care of the formalities. Let's get this show on the road.
Who moved my cheese?
All right, Cheesehead Nation, welcome back to Cheesehead Radio. Packers take it on the chin again in Minnesota 24-17. We're going to go through who moved our cheese. First of all, Sharp Cheddar, the excellent crowd-pleasing favorite, my Sharp Cheddar this week, Aaron Jones. 72 yards rushing, 21 yards receiving. He's had 5 touchdowns in his last 5 games. By the way, the kid's a stud, and he put up those numbers against the third-ranked defense. Aaron Jones, not a fluke.
All right, I'm going to go with David Bakhtiari. You truly appreciate his outstanding work when he's not on the field. Take him off for a few plays to treat an injury, and you realize how much he truly does protect Aaron on the blind side. He's my sharp cheddar.
And I'm going to go with Jair Alexander. Let it be known that if you notice a Packers defensive back actually breaking up a pass, there's a very good chance number 23 will be in your picture. Jair Alexander, my sharp cheddar.
Next up will be our Swiss cheese. It's good. Has some holes in it. My Swiss cheese this week is going to be J.K. Scott. Now, it's never a good thing when your punter is up there among your MVP candidates. It's not a good sign for your team, but guess what? He had 6 punts on Sunday. 3 of them were inside the 20-yard line. Now, for a guy who's been a little shaky in his rookie year, he is helping slow the bleeding with the field position.
All right, we're 3/4 of the way through the season, and I'm still not sure how to say his first name. But is it Equimanius, or how do I say it?
That sounds about right.
Okay, Equimanius St. Brown, EQSB. He has a middle name of Imhotep. I learned that this weekend. He was a baby wide receiver for the game. He stepped up. He, just like Valdez-Scantling, really doesn't play like a rookie. He was there when you needed him. And the fact that his middle name is Imhotep, he's either Egyptian royalty or a mummy, and that just makes him all the cooler in my book.
Well, that means we have to add an I to his acronym, right? So either EISB or EQISB. Unless he has more names, then we'll have to research that.
He actually has more names. It just suddenly It becomes alphabet soup if I go by the initials then.
All right. My Swiss cheese is going to be one Antonio Morrison added to the team during the season. He's filled in the last couple of games and has played actually very well against the run, which is what he's known for. He's a hard hitter. He was in on 7 tackles this last game. Can't cover anybody, you know, so those are the holes he has. But if you use him the right way, he's a useful player. So I'm giving it to Antonio Morrison.
All right, and finally, it's our Limburger cheese, the foul-smelling, throw-it-away kind of cheese. My Limburger is just going to be the conservative play calling. A 4th-and-4 in the second quarter. The offensive rolling. They're getting things going, and they punt again. Yes, I know we can debate, should you go for it? What are the numbers? Whatever. You sense the air just come out of the team at that point. Not again.
All right, my Limburger. I'm revisiting someone I Limburgered earlier in the season. That's Kentrell Bryce. If he isn't hurting other teammates by his lack of awareness in space and time, he's killing the people on the other team. And it happened again this week, and he pretty much snot-bubbled himself in the process. Put him in bubble wrap before he actually causes more damage.
We have a new adjective, Limburgered. Okay. My Limburger cheese is going to be, sadly, fan favorite Tremont Williams, who had a bit of a bad game, mostly due to two plays that stood out and, falling down in coverage and letting the Vikings score an easy touchdown was one, and the muff pump punt at the end. What in the world he was thinking there for a veteran player, I have no idea, but sorry, Tremont, this week you are my Limburger cheese.
You commented on Limburgered as the verb. You had no comments on the other verb, snot bubbled? Really, Al?
I'm more a verb type of guy.
All right.
And
well,
adjectives.
Hey, we've got
verbs and adjectives.
Verbs and adjectives. There we go. So we have a lot more great Packer talk coming up here on Cheesehead Radio, but first, a word from our sponsors.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
The Playbook.
And I'll bet you can get those tickets pretty cheaply this upcoming weekend. So, I feel almost like we're already doing an autopsy on the Packers season, and they still have 5 games left.
Right.
But it feels like
they still
like
have a mathematical chance.
Yes.
Roughly,
yeah, like 3% or 6% or something like that. So I'm
more,
saying
yeah,
there's a chance.
It's slightly more. It's 9% chance that they get one of the wild card spots.
Provided Pluto's in line with Jupiter or something weird like that.
Yeah. A whole bunch of teams have to lose 2 games. Basically,
I'm
all
willing
the
to
teams,
put the whammy.
All the teams in Let's, contention have to lose 2 games.
Time to start putting the whammy on everybody.
Exactly. Well, just talking a little bit about the impact of this loss, if you have your pulse on the Twitterverse, I think you saw that most Packer fans obviously were expecting and hoping for a win. And I don't know about you guys, I kind of felt as we got closer and closer to game time, you saw some of this anxiety starting to come out, like, oh my gosh, I don't know what we're going to do if we're going to lose. If we lose this game, they got to fire McCarthy right away. It was almost to me that we're looking back on McCarthy's career and how his teams have always seemed to come back when their backs are against the wall. And this goes back even before Rodgers' tenure. This goes back to even Favre. It was almost like, okay, we got to do it. It's desperate. It's do or die time. And then all of a sudden we died. And there's just this feeling of almost shock. Like, that's not the way this is supposed to play out. This isn't the way the script is supposed to go. We're supposed to go on a big winning streak. What's going on? Your thoughts?
Well, you know, the wheels really started coming off the cart when the Packers of yesteryear start reminiscing on Twitter about how every time they started losing more and more, coach would get a crappier and crappier hotel further and further away from the stadium. You know, they're talking about the stench, you know, and then, of course, clueless as ever, Brady Popinka pops up. He goes, oh, I thought these were the nicest hotels in the area because the place was kind of a dump anyhow. If that's all they can talk about is the quality of the Roach Motel they stayed in, yeah, the wheels have come off, and even the most hopeful are starting to give up hope. But, yeah, I agree with you, CD. I was optimistic on Monday. By Sunday coming around, I'm like, oh, I've got a bad feeling about this. And, yeah, we were right.
Yeah, CD, I think you hit the nail right on the head. This is something that has just seemingly always happened effortlessly whenever they got to the point where they really had their backs to the wall. Well, suddenly, magically, things just turned around, and this time there's been no magic. There's been no turnaround. There's been no, I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for, but what you're seeing from them is just shock, dismay, and really, I think, just not understanding why it didn't happen.
I'm just noticing this becoming a pattern with the last couple of games. They can be doing well. They can be getting a little ahead of momentum, and just a trivial mistake will just send them into a tailspin. They can't recover from those types of errors, and it's becoming more and more apparent with each game.
Yeah, the resiliency isn't there, right? And I think the leader of that pack was always Rodgers. He was always resilient. When just when you thought, you know, things looked terrible and even worse, he would always somehow find a way, right? He'd always find a way to bring them back. And that just hasn't happened pretty much since the first couple of games of the season. We just haven't seen that.
And I think that that's a huge part of it. We remember times after really bad losses, and that's right when Aaron Rodgers would swagger out with all his confidence. It's R-E-L-A-X, or we're going to run the table. And we're like, what? We're supposed to be miserable. He's really optimistic. He looks almost as depressed as we do. In that post-game interview, he was rambling. He was not making sense. He was just like, oh, yeah, maybe we'll beat these guys. We'll just need some help. McCarthy looked like he was going to cry. So you almost feel like this team has lost its gusto. It's lost its motivation. It just seems to be a ship without a rudder.
Yeah, I don't think you'll get much argument.
Well, segueing on here, the Packers are at the crossroads. I think we can make an assumption that Jersey Isle's favorite coach, Mike McCarthy, may not be a part of the team by the next June. How do we approach how we want to attack this team? Do we want to bring in a coach and just hope, hey, we got the talent, let's just see if we can motivate them properly? Or is this a full rebuild? Is this something where we literally blow this team up, have just a few choice players, and see what's going to happen?
I don't know about blowing it up, but I think you're going to see a heck of a lot of change. I think you're going to see our GM Goody really try to put his stamp on this team. You know, he started with some of the in-season trades, which obviously you never saw before, sending a guy like HaHa packing, for example. Certainly sent a message, even though they all claimed it wasn't really sending a message. I think a bunch of players pretty much have seen the handwriting on the wall. I don't think a complete blow-up is needed, but certainly a bunch of reworking and retooling and some cosmetic surgery is needed.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think it's going to be a little bit of both. I think you're going to have some core players that they're definitely going to want to bring out to the forefront. You know, keeping, you know, Rodgers, Adams, Aaron Jones on, and Bakhtiari for that matter. They're the anchor of the offense. You've got Jair Alexander and Kenny Clark on the defense, and those are two very vastly different first round draft choices, but both of each have paid off very well. But the rest of the defense, other than Mike Daniels, I don't see much standing out. I think we're going to have to really reimagine the defense more than anything else. And I think this is where you're going to see us stepping away from the Ted Thompson era and going to more to the Goot era. I think it's imperative that they draft somebody in secondary, ideally a safety in the first round, maybe a linebacker in the second round. I could see somebody on the offensive line because, let's face it, Brian Bulaga, if he's not out a game or two being hurt, it's not a season. And it's becoming to be diminishing returns. He steps out, and unfortunately there's nothing in the background to fill those gaps. We have to have somebody. At least we're starting to build up. But I think we're not going to be married to these Thompson draft choices. You're already seeing them get rid of people like Montgomery, like we got rid of HaHa, and then Demaryius Randall last year. I think it's okay to clean house in the Thompson era because we're going to be reimagining the Packers with a different regime. If we're having a different coach, I think we're going to be playing to a different mindset, and it's okay to clean house. I have no problems with it. It's business. I love, you know, as much as I am nostalgic for certain players, I'm okay when it's time to move on. I'm sad Jordy Nelson's gone, but I can totally understand why, because we have receivers that were ready to fill that gap. So, yeah, I see us cleaning some house And it's going to be really interesting what we do with the draft and with free agency. I'm hoping we're more aggressive in free agency. We saw some flashes of it last year with Jimmy Graham and with Mo Wilkerson. Hopefully the new regime continues that aggressiveness in filling talent with some seasoned veterans.
I have such a hard time thinking about us drafting two defensive backs again in the first two rounds. We've done this now, was it three out of the last 5 years?
But we picked poorly. That is the thing. We pass on somebody like TJ Watt. We pick for our second round pick, we pick, you know, a power forward in basketball. You know, we didn't pick well, I think, and that was reflecting more Thompson at the end of his tenure. I think that our biggest deficits are still in the defense. And I think it's imperative that we start filling those gaps first and foremost.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I just think that, boy, we got to start looking at pass rushers and guys along the defensive line. And certainly we got to put someone on those outside linebacker positions, because I don't think Clay Matthews is going to be back. I don't think that Nick Perry is going to be back. So you've got a lot of positions to fill. And, boy, I just hate continuing to keep addressing that secondary over and over again with our first two picks, because, boy, you're sure counting on a lot of middle and late round picks to be coming through. And guess what? That's partially where our talent drain is on both sides of the ball.
Yeah. Early reports on this draft is that it's pretty chock full of pass rushers, which is a real
good
thing. Yeah. So
which is exactly what we need.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that it's a pretty safe, if that's true. I mean, I haven't done research myself yet, but if what I've read so far is true, I think it's a pretty safe bet that that's where you got to look. And you know, that's the impact position where you want to pick a first rounder, right? They're going to have probably the most impact of almost any position other than cornerback or quarterback if you pick a really good edge rusher. So I think that's a good shot there. And then I think safety and offensive line, without a doubt, those two come next. But here we are talking about the draft. And it's not even December yet. Isn't that fun?
Already doing the autopsy.
So you brought up Perry, and I really don't see, with his injury record and his really ability to fade into the woodwork, I don't see he has any real trade value. If we're going to get a fourth rounder for HaHa Clinton Dix, what are we going to get, $50 and a case of beer for Perry? We have a savings of 3.6 if we cut him versus cap space. So is that $3.6 million savings worth enough just to cut him and let him go?
Well, you have to look at who do they have as to step in, right? I mean, if you're confident that you're going to draft a pass rusher with your first round pick, then maybe it's an easier decision to make. If you're really undecided, then, you know, is he better than nothing if he's healthy? Yeah, but what does he do at this point? Is he a pass rusher? No, he can hold the edge okay, and he can play against the run. Do you need to spend that much money on a guy who can do that? Can you get a backup, or can you get someone else in for what you would save, let's say the $3.6 million you would save by cutting Perry, to do that job? Probably. You know, you may not get somebody more dynamic, but you could probably get somebody to do the same job and not be hurt half of the time. So to me, everything leans towards save the $3.6 million, bring in other people, and roll with that.
And I disagree. I think you can get something for Perry. I think he's a 29-year-old linebacker. Remember that if he's traded, we absorb that signing bonus. I mean, that's what gets accelerated. That does not get passed on to the team that takes him. So, I mean, they're getting probably a relatively reasonably a priced linebacker who was, you know, an all-pro, or not all-pro, Pro Bowl-type player a few years ago, had a great season. And I think there's a team that'll look at that and say, you know what, I'll pass up a fifth-rounder or a sixth-rounder and see if we can do a reclamation project with him. So I think you can get something for him. You know, it may not be a fourth rounder, but you'll get something for him. And like I said, you have the cap savings, and you might get an extra pick out of it.
I don't know. I think the injury history is just too much of a deterrent to other teams. To
50 bucks and a case of beer. That's what you're going to get for him.
John Gruden is here.
All he wants is draft picks. He's just stocking up on every draft pick he can. And
Jordy
fresh.
Nelson. Come on.
Well,
how does
for
that
now.
Guy still have a job? Seriously. It's like he took the really bad.
He's got a 100-year contract. I don't know.
He took a really bad
$1 gazillion.
He made them worse. How do you do that?
Much worse.
Much worse.
Unless that was part of the plan from the beginning, is it just stink, get high draft picks, trade players for more high draft picks. You know, who knows? That could have been the plan from the very beginning.
That could be. You know, there was always the thought that Indiana sucked for luck.
Yeah, anyway.
So anyone else do you see really going? I don't see Tremont Williams coming back, and I really don't see paying him over $6 million for what he's doing.
Yeah, I guess the savings on Williams would be $4.75 million, which I think is a good amount of savings to not bring him back. I mean, I like the move. From the mentorship standpoint, you know, to have a veteran guy like that who's always prepared, who's always played hard, who's a professional to kind of mentor the young guys coming in, you know, Alexander and Jackson and even King, who was there from the year before. So I was a big fan of the move from that standpoint, not so much, you know, play on the field at this point. And, you know, he's been the good soldier. He's moved to safety. He's done whatever they asked. That's wonderful. But, I don't know, I think it's time. He's, what, 36 years old now?
Which is like 108 in football years. But, Al, what you just described is an assistant coach, not a player.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That also doesn't go against the salary cap, correct?
Very true.
Well, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with that because, yeah I think he's got a fabulous football IQ. He's really good at motivating younger players. I just think that I joke that he's 108 years old, but he's not the Tremont Williams from the 2010 Packers. He's a step slower, and it really shows when it comes down to him and being the last man between a receiver and scoring. I wouldn't have a problem with if he did a coaching internship or he got signed on as a, you know, whatever in what capacity. But I think he's used up his value as a player. You know, part of it makes me sad, but maybe he has a different role for the team.
We keep talking about how we have $49 million in salary cap space, but that does not include the guys that we have not re-signed as our own free agents. So if we kind of go through that list, there's some pretty big names there that are not factored into that $49 million yet. So let's talk a little bit about this. Clay Matthews, do you re-sign him?
No.
Depends on the price.
Yeah.
Depends
Randall
on
Cobb.
The price.
Oh, man,
no.
That's
Wilkerson.
Tough. Probably not. For
Wilkerson, you can probably get cheap again. You know, you got him mm-hmm. on a prove-it deal. Well, he didn't get a chance to prove much, so he probably needs another prove-it deal. So Wilkerson, I would do.
I would like to see his x-ray first before I made that decision. Because he may have had a career ender. I'm serious.
Right,
he may have had a career ender.
No, I mean, that's a different story. Health is a different thing. You know, putting that aside, I'd like to see him back on a prove-it deal.
How about Breland? We assigned him as a free agent this year. He's actually up again. Do you give him a nice deal?
No.
Yeah, we just haven't seen enough of him to really make a judgment from my standpoint. I don't know.
Geronimo Allison.
I think I'd keep him. I'd keep him. When he's hot, he's one of Rodgers' favorite targets. And there's something filthy wonderful about having four really good targets to aim at as receivers because one can always be a decoy. And which one do you want to take the gamble on covering as a decoy? And which one's going to gash you? I say you keep him, and I don't think he'll be a gazillion dollars either.
Yeah, he did seem, I thought, to be building up a nice trust relationship with Rodgers, where Rodgers would seek him out when he was in trouble, and he seemed to have a fairly decent idea of where to go or where Rodgers would want him to be. So I felt that was really starting to build, and then unfortunately he got hurt. So I'd look to bring him back.
He runs such clean routes. That's what I'm really impressed with. It's like Rodgers is going to throw it on a dime, and he's going to be right there on that dime.
Yep.
I'd be pretty shocked if they brought back both Cobb and Allison.
Yeah, Cobb's gone.
I think they keep Allison over Cobb.
Yeah, he's gone.
All of our backup tight ends are free agents. Mercedes Lewis, Lance Kendricks, Big Bob Tanyan. And then you have Graham, Jimmy Graham, who we could save another $4.3 million if he was let go this season. So it's interesting.
You off with take their heads. Let them all go.
And sign all three of those tight ends, probably.
We haven't had much luck with tight ends recently, you know?
No.
I
say we keep Graham because he hasn't done much because McCarthy underutilizes him. And I think we need that Joker-style tight end. Yeah, he's a little older, but there's a huge step down between Jimmy and the other tight ends. It's like Lance and Tanyan. You know, you can get those for, you know, a fire sale. Neither one has much value in trade. Neither one will cost a whole lot to re-sign. I say bring back the second-tier tight ends and let them battle it out.
All right, let's transition a little bit. Let's revisit the double-edged sword of fourth and short and desperate. This really has haunted us the last 2 weeks.
So you have these fourth downs, which can make or break a game. And we talked about the first one of the game this week. You know, let's go for it or punt, and we punted. And then there was the let's go for it, and let's run it up the middle and not work, really. These fourth down and short tend to be these gut check plays that have defined, you know, been a pivotal make or break element of the last two games. And in all three examples, we have not risen to the occasion. We've either given up, shown our bellies, or ran the stalest of stale John Kuhn play without John Kuhn, and might as well just punted it because everyone knew what McCarthy was going to do. That's what I wanted to talk about, is has the Packers lost that killer instinct when it comes to let's plow through and try to score?
I don't know about killer instinct, but what about doing things that are successful, like a quarterback sneak? Do the Packers ever do that? How many first downs does Tom Brady and other quarterbacks get with just a simple quarterback sneak, first down, okay, extend the drive, now you got 3-4 more plays? Why do the Packers not do that?
And it's such a simple play. You just lean forward. If it's short, it's fourth and really short. Why are you starting?
A foot and a half, right.
But then you've got McCarthy calling a John Kuhn play where we don't have a fullback.
John Kuhn.
Yeah, straight up right. The middle. You know, everyone would yell Kuhn. Before, you know, I remember going to many Packer games several years in the past. It's like third and short, and the entire stadium starts screaming, you know, chanting Kuhn because we know what play is going to come, and it starts 5 to 7 yards deep and straight up the middle like a bowling ball. Well, if I was calling that 2012, don't you think the other 31 teams know that that's exactly what McCarthy's going to call every single time?
And to make things worse, he uses the wrong running back for that play. I mean, all right, if you're really convinced that you want to run that play, you don't do it with Aaron Jones. You do it with Jamal Williams.
Yeah, that's where
he's a guy that can knock people back. Williams is a guy that can break through tackles and knock people back, not Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones is more avoiding tackles.
Well, Aaron Jones goes more east-west. That's what his talent is. He is not a bowling ball that's going to knock down.
So it's wrong on so many levels is my point.
Well, it's the stubbornness of cramming a square peg into a round hole. You've got this undersized running back. You have a tight end pretending that they're a blocking back that really doesn't do a good job. And you just think it's going to work because it worked 6 years ago. And it's different personnel. And every team in the league has seen this play, and they know that's what he's going to do with inches to go.
This is one that's definitely finally made the news, and it seems very sacrilegious, but Aaron Rodgers, I think we really saw the impact his level of play is having on this team. In the first quarter, I remember commenting on Twitter, I said, this is what Aaron Rodgers does when he's at its best. He was going back, making great, smart, quick decisions, and he was throwing darts. I mean, he was whipping that, putting it right on the money. Obviously, a couple touchdowns in that first quarter, and I was like, oh, my gosh, this is what Aaron Rodgers is supposed to do. This is what he's supposed to be. And then what happened the rest of the game? Went back there, hanging in the pocket, doing his routine now of going back, pretending to go through a couple of reads, immediately starting to scramble, just with that undisciplined footwork, because now we always have to throw on the run, throwing off the back foot, throwing the ball in the dirt with balls that are just getting away from him. We had this huge debate on whether or not is this Aaron Rodgers' fault or does he share in the blame. I think it's pretty clear that when his brain is engaged, this offense is really, really tough. And when it is not, it's pretty average.
Now, I saw Jay Sorge from WTMJ just put that question out there, and you know, he's obviously no medical expert, but he wonders, and I honestly don't know, is this poor back foot throw, is that because he still has some lingering effects from that knee injury? And, you know, it's possible, but I don't think it's a mechanical issue. I think it's a head issue right now. Things go well. He's very confident. He has command within the pocket. Things start falling apart. And I think a great example was when Bakhtiari went out for a drive because he was getting treatment. And he had to start running from his life. And I think all he could think about is, oh, my God, I'm going to get sacked again. And any train of thought he had was gone, and it just got sloppier and sloppier and sloppier. So I don't think it's his knee. I think it's his head right now. And, you know, perhaps I think this is where maybe a change of coaching may be helpful. And I don't think he's uncoachable, and I don't think it's this ego that some people on Twitter are saying, oh, his ego is getting away from him. I think, like any player that's lost his groove, he needs guidance. And right now I think it seems like it's a negative relationship with McCarthy. He needs somebody that's going to take him under his wing and coach him, not stand beside him. And I think, you know, sometimes there needs to be a paternalistic aspect of this is what you're going to do. But I also think he needs that the guidance and the ability to collaborate, because I think that whole relationship has been blown to smithereens. And I think that's where I think Rodgers will improve, is with he needs someone that's going to guide him.
Yeah, I also think that for some weird reason that nobody can seem to answer, is they go away from what they seem to be having success with, right? If you go back and you analyze those two drives where they score touchdowns, I think it was their second and third possessions of the game, right? What were they doing? Well, they were running Aaron Jones. They were doing things like they ran a jet sweep. Rodgers threw a three-step drop pass, which he hasn't done in forever, and actually scored a touchdown on that. Aaron Jones scored a running touchdown. Great success. Two touchdowns. The next possession, in comes Jamal Williams. Out goes Aaron Jones because it's Jamal Williams' turn, right? And the entire offense, and I'm not blaming this on Jamal Williams, but I think the rhythm that they had developed just got completely disrupted for no apparent good reason. And now the offense suddenly becomes stagnant. And I think you had a good thing going. Why go away from what was working? Do it until they show they can stop it, and then look for alternatives. So I think that's part of it, too. And I think we've seen that in a lot of these games where they go away from what was being successful.
So that's a very generalized statement, Al. Are you saying that that's on Aaron Rodgers?
No.
Okay.
Predominantly, no. McCarthy, my good old buddy.
So transitioning, one thing we got to say that's improved, you know, we did take this team and we did limit them to 24 points. When you really think how much time Cousins had in the pocket, we did make a couple of really nice stands on this team. A couple missed field goals, obviously forced them into those situations. One thing that I noticed that's really important is that if you remember how many times we kept saying there were communication errors in the defensive backfield over the past several years under Dom Capers. And you compare that to what's happening this year, we're not seeing that. Are there execution errors? Absolutely. Are we suffering from a lack of talent in certain areas? Absolutely. When our offense is spluttering and we're leaving that defense out on the field for too long, are they getting run down? Sure, but we're not seeing that communication thing. And I really want to give some credit to Blake Martinez. I don't think he's a superstar. I don't think he's a guy that you put in there and say, oh my gosh, this is certainly level of what Clay Matthews used to be, or Reggie White, or any of those types of players. He's a very solid Brian Noble-esque kind of player who's just assignment sure, is there to wrap up on tackles. but he's really handling this communication role. I don't think he's been missing any snaps because he's needed out there. So, you know, once again, credit to Mike Pettine, and credit to Blake Martinez for taking a leadership role and cleaning something up we've been complaining about for years.
And, you know, the irony of that is, right, that all these lack of communication errors are coming with a bunch of rookies, replacement players, undrafted players, because everyone's injured. It's a completely different backfield back there every week, and yet they're holding it together much better than when the Packers had more veteran players back there. So that has got to be a great testament to the coaching and the defensive quarterback, who, as you mentioned, is Blake Martinez.
Well, I think he kind of had to step up because nobody else was. And I think we've lacked that sense of leadership, I hate to say it, since A.J. Hawk left. And he, again, just like Blake Martinez, he wasn't the greatest player on the field, but his leadership, and I think in his ability to get things, see things, get things going, I think is vastly underappreciated. And I think I see Martinez as a little more of a physical version of A.J. Hawk, but he's starting to develop that presence on the field. And I think that's a void that we've had for a while. And if you have people like Clay Matthews not stepping up, we had to bring in Tremont Williams to import some leadership because you weren't seeing it from HaHa. And you've got a bunch of babies in the cornerback positions. I think just out of necessity, Blake rose to the occasion, and I have to give him kudos for that.
Packer tweets from Packer.
We have reached that point in the show where it's time for us to go through our favorite Packer tweets of the week. We're going to take a vote on the end, see who gets this week's tweet of the week. Kelly, we start with you.
Okay, I'm going with everybody's favorite hamster pirate, @PirateNer. Is it possible that Capers was propping up McCarthy these last 6 years? Things that make you go,
Major shade. Major shade. All right, my tweet comes from the Bob Becker, good old Becker. Well, I just ordered my new Packer shirt, and on it, instead of a great statement such as run the table or relax, in about a 6-point font, it says, so we just got to go back home, get some rest, beat Arizona, and then come back and beat Atlanta, then go to Chicago, place one a number of times, beat them, then go to New York around Christmas, beat them, then come home against Detroit, beat them, get a little help.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
All right.
Word to the wise, do not ever be seen doing anything stupid around Bob Becker when he has his phone out. You will be the next T-shirt.
In response to my tweet on how the offense was humming early on when Aaron Jones was actually being used, this tongue-in-cheek response came from Ron Clements. It's almost like if McCarthy keeps feeding the ball, it will make Rodgers' job easier.
Womp, womp. All right, now we take a vote. Kelly, can't vote for yourself. Tweet of the week.
I'm voting for the Bob Becker.
All right. And I am going to vote. This actually is a tough one this week, but I'm going to go with Kelly's Pirate Nur, just because... just an incredible amount of shade right now with McCarthy. So Jersey Al, looks like you are deciding the winner once again, and it won't be you.
Yeah, it's got to be Bob Becker. Got to go with that shirt. It's brilliant.
I might go get that one printed up. That's actually really good.
You know, it's brilliant.
I actually want that T-shirt, to be honest.
I may take that in tomorrow. And then you got a hashtag. We need a little help. Hashtag need a little help at the end.
I'm sure Bob already has one made. So Bob, I'll take one and one for my 12-year-old.
Yes. Where do we order?
Right. Yes. The Bob Becker, you have this week's tweet of the week.
Tweet of the week.
So I'm looking at the playoff guide in which someone has basically taken Aaron Rodgers' rambling post-game press conference and has actually said, here's what has to happen. The Packers have to win all five games. Four out of the five things need to happen. The Eagles need to lose one. The Seahawks need to lose two. The Panthers need to lose two. The Redskins need to lose two. And or the Vikings need to lose three. That's called a little help.
Dude, you said there would be no math. Really, I can't remember all of that. No math. So everybody has to lose two or the Vikings have to lose three. Is that what the too long did not read version of that is?
Four of those five events have to happen. But unfortunately, any four of those events have to happen, except the Packers have to win all five games, including the Bears. Yeah.
So everybody has to lose, and we have to run the table. So you're saying there's a chance.
Yes.
Hey, I'm saying there's really not a chance, but that's me. I'm saying
I don't have to pay for playoff tickets, so hooray, I guess, on that standpoint, that the credit card bill at the holidays is a little less.
Exactly. All right. Let's get to this week's Hot Pockets.
Come on.
Hot Pockets. Herb sauce.
Cheesy drizzle.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so to quote a little Shakespeare, off with the crown, and with the crown his head. I should have done that in a Shakespearean British accent, but I'm not very good at that. So, or if you prefer something a little less erudite, to quote former Packers coach Kevin Green, it is time. Time for the man wearing the coach's crown, Mike McCarthy, to see his reign in Green Bay come to an end. But hey, he'll still have a street named after him in town. Much like Andy Reid, it appears Mike will need to be put in the much less comfortable position of coaching a new team to make him realize he needs to evolve along with the league in order to maintain success. This highly successful NFL coach will need to prove that again elsewhere. As tough as it is for me, I can acquiesce and be okay with the Packers not making the playoffs if it brings McCarthy's departure. While I don't expect anything to happen during the season, I expect Mike to be part of the traditional Black Monday purge of unsuccessful NFL coaches. Appropriate that this year it comes on December 31st. Hopefully, we can all toast and dream wistfully of a happy new year for the Packers. And that is my
Hot Pocket.
All right, because CD is highlighting all of Al's 50-cent words as we're doing our little spiel. I can't help but think of, he mentioned erudite, which was a faction in the book Divergent. I guess I'll have to go with a different faction from that book, and is Dauntless, which the Packers really aren't right now. So I'm going to point out to everyone, and I think everyone should read this if they haven't already, Mike Freeman's Bleacher Report article from yesterday, Monday. It isn't just the disgruntled and, dare I say, entitled Packers fans calling for heads and pointing out the stagnant leadership at 1265 Lombardi. The national media has caught on to the whiff of McCarthy's stale stench. To paraphrase Rodney Harrison from that article, no defense in the league is scared of Mike McCarthy's offense anymore. And you get what sounds like a Queen song, run, run, pass, run, run, pass. We will decode you. Everyone has decoded and has all the cheat codes to the McCarthy offense at this point. He hasn't evolved since 2010. When they won the Super Bowl, it was innovative. It was fearsome. And at that time, I mentioned this before, running Kuhn up the middle like a bowling ball, like an old school fullback, was kind of clever. But Kuhn, not to mention the entire fullback position as a whole, have gone the way of the dodo. Unfortunately, the team hasn't caught up with that. And the team needs to evolve and reimagine itself. It needs to recapture its creativity and innovation. And it won't happen running schemes from a decade ago. The league has moved on, and it's time the Packers move on as well. And that is my
Hot Pocket.
Mike Sherman. Now, unlike most Packer fans, I like Mike. And I remember his tenure. Now, think about it. If you don't include that cursed 2005 season where we had a brand new GM who decided to blow up the team around him and leave him basically with egg on his face, he had a record of 53-27. He won two games for every loss, still second best winning percentage in Packer history. Now, he was a cerebral coach. He was a thinking man's coach. He was offensive minded, and he led the team to 3 consecutive division titles and 4 straight playoff appearances. That's in 5 years. And then he was run out of town on a rail with pitchforks and torches. If fans could have tarred and feathered him, they would have. Now, yes, we blamed him for that ill-advised dual role of being head coach and GM, yes. But regardless, during those years, we had a long stretch of winning football. That for a, yes, Kelly, entitled fan base, which we were, it's not enough if we're not winning a Super Bowl. Doesn't matter if we're winning. Doesn't matter if we make the playoffs. We're not winning enough Super Bowls. Sound familiar? As Mike McCarthy begins his exodus from Green Bay, let's hope that the fan base has become maybe a little less entitled and maybe a little more appreciative of the fact that McCarthy has contributed something to this franchise over the last 13 years. It doesn't mean we have to bow down or not be ready to see him go, but we also don't have to treat him the way that we treated Mike Sherman, who I don't think has really returned to Green Bay since. All good things come to an end, and instead of demanding a pound of flesh, we can wish McCarthy to no longer be our coach, but we can also give him some respect that he's earned. Let's be better. Good luck to you, Mike McCarthy, in the future. And that is my
Hot Pocket
Cheesehead Radio Packers Game Predictions.
Well, I guess we got to keep playing the games, don't we? The Green Bay Packers return to Lambeau Field for what should be some of the cheapest home game tickets. I think I predicted I'm going to be able to walk to Scalper's Row next week with $20, and I'll bet you I'll get a good seat. They're already going under $50, I think, online. Noon game, who cares? Jersey Al, your prediction.
Well, this is supposed to be a get-well game for the Packers, right? Well, kind of. I think they will win. But does it mean that they're well? No. I've got the Packers 28, Cardinals 17.
Well, last week I think I was the only person to pick the Packers, and I ended up with some egg on my face. This is the game that should be in the... I was looking at the rankings. I think the Cardinals have like the 3rd worst defense in the league, and I think the 32nd ranked offense in the league. I mean, they're terrible. They're terrible. However, I don't think the Packers are going to put up a fight. We can't beat the Vikings, and they tried to give us the game. No, just no. To me, this is the camel's back game. It's going to get broken. Cardinals 34, Packers 24.
Oops, I thought I was on mute. Hey, I agree. I think the wheels have yet to come off the bus, and I think they have. It happens this week. I think we hit our rock bottom losing, which should not be the trap game. But, hey, if you're a bad team, is it still a trap game losing to a worse team? Yes, no, maybe?
Sure.
All right. So I guess this is the equivalent of a trap game this week. I don't have a whole lot of faith. I think they're still bottoming out. I get the Cardinals 24 and the Packers, the lopsided 16, because I think we're going to see Mason Crosby rise to the top more than anything else. But unfortunately, I don't think Mason's going to be enough.
I think the Packers, just to echo what you're saying there, Kelly, I think the Packers still have so much aura and they have so much, there's still so much about them, the shiny golden team that other teams just want to beat, and now they're beatable. So I think the Cardinals are going to come in here and, you know, if they sense blood, I mean, they're going to like, oh my gosh, we can get a win, you know, just to feel good about themselves. And I think we've seen that at times in the past before where Packers are not doing well and it's like, hey, this is our Super Bowl for a bad team because it's the Packers in Lambeau Field. I agree. I think they're going to put up a really good fight.
And I think that I think you hit on something. I think the way Rodgers responded after the game, where usually he's trying to rally the troops with some catchphrase, I think he even senses blood in the water right now and the Sharks are circling. And that's sad. I don't like to see my team that dejected, but they are.
Well, it does remind you a little bit of last year where, you know, you really felt that team kind of quit last year. There were a lot of guys going through motions last year. You kind of thought with Aaron Rodgers being back, that wasn't going to happen again, but you're kind of feeling that there's that dejectedness, that little is the season over yet feeling, and it hurts. It's hard to see as a Packer fan.
All right, I guess that's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining us tonight on Cheesehead Radio in our 9th season. Make sure to head over to PackersTalk.com where you can explore several unique Packer podcasts. Please follow at PackersTalkNet on Twitter and like us on Facebook. Cheesehead Radio and all Packers Talk podcasts are available on iTunes. Just Google Packers Talk iTunes and you'll find it. Be sure to subscribe and please leave us a review. You can also listen by using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcatching app and search for Packers Talk. Finally, please be sure to check out our sponsor, Ticket King. You can find them on the web at theticketking.com. It'll be dirt cheap this week. That's theticketking.com. That's a wrap, gentlemen. Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go. See y'all next week, everybody.
Good night.
Cheesehead Radio.